Georgie Dinkov, Generative Energy, number 83. How are you, sir? How is DC? How's your life?
It's same as just like Ray said. I want to say very good, like he says, but it's about the same.
Very
about
good. The same.
I think the different thing is exactly you imitate him very well. They're starting to put up a fence against around the White House and the Capitol Hill. So I don't know if that's the. What should I call it? A harbinger or a prediction of what's about to come. But and there's a lot like a much bigger police presence lately. So they must be expecting something. Maybe it's the midterms in November. Maybe something before that. Who knows? But with the market crashing recently and Bitcoin getting wiped out and everything else, I suspect they expect some kind of a commotion, social commotion. Maybe it's the protest for the Supreme Court reversal of Roe versus Wade. Who knows?
Or but it's moms it's, it, protesting
we're
kinda, baby
we're
not food.
As bad as when, you know, after January 6th, they kind of like walled up everything here. We're about 40% there, getting back there.
Do you think it's a group of angry moms that can't get baby formula?
I don't think so. if anything, they will probably use, I don't know if you saw on the forum, but I thought that the leakage of the opinion was basically a desperate move because the Democrats, if we can even think of them as two separate parties, but basically the faction that is in power right now is in desperate need of somehow like avoiding getting crushed, in the November election. I'm sure a lot of the Republicans that are upcoming and hoping to win, they're rhinos, right? Republicans in name only. But I think there's always a chance of a true independent coming through. And basically the faction that is currently in power is desperately trying to prevent that. And the way you do it is basically telling people, look, we told you all along, these people are religious fundamentalists. They're going to, they're going to impinge on your freedom to do anything at some point. I mean, it was going to start with abortion. Next thing is gay marriage. Before you know it, I don't know, you can't wear, if you're a male, you can't wear lipstick in public anymore or something like that. And I think they're probably hoping for some kind of social unrest similar to what we saw in the summer of 2020.
Yeah, I didn't pay much attention to that, but clearly the eugenics obsessed elite do want abortion to be around always. Like that's always been part of the plan. Of course. So I didn't take that seriously for a second. So yeah, it's clearly just to rile people.
And not just for population control. They love to harvest all those tissues and do all of their like nefarious experiments.
Yeah, this is getting dark.
And at this point, I think wasn't Nestle said that like they have like modified fetal cells in virtually like 92% of their products.
I didn't know
I have
that.
No idea why would you need to put modified fetal cells in any product. So if somebody can explain this to me, why is there a commercial need, right? Then I'm all ears because the only reason that I can come up with is something nefarious. Testing something on the general population. I think they've kind of given up on the idea of a clinical trial. After the vaccines and the way they were hastily rushed through, right? Now they're saying, we don't have to do clinical trials anymore. We can just keep dumping stuff on the general population and see who survives. And then that's how we're going to discover new things.
Yeah, this episode is getting dark really quickly. But that there is that.
Look, it's been going on for a long time.
I know.
Exactly. Discovering America.
I'm just joking. But the... Yeah, without going too down a rabbit hole. Yeah, they the Planned Parenthood. Remember those leaked videos where, or maybe it was a deposition or something where they sold the organs and things. Yeah. It doesn't matter what you feel about it religiously. It's something's like super messed up with it, like selling livers of unborn new children and stuff. It's very bizarre.
And it's just the way how nonchalantly like that lady went about this whole thing, right? Like she was pitching different organs and like negotiating price and things like that. And especially, I mean, call me old fashioned and call me maybe even sexist, but I would expect a woman to behave a little more motherly than that when she talks about unborn babies.
Yeah, it was disturbing.
And of course, now the feminists will be all over me saying, like, you dumb patriarchic son of a bitch or whatever.
We just lost half our listenership.
I hate the patriarchy with a vengeance, too. But that woman was evil to the core. And I don't care if she's a feminist or not. Some people are just evil.
Yeah. I think there's some person that worked at Planned Parenthood. Anyways, okay, so what else is going on in D.C.? Do you notice food stuff disappearing or is anything changing?
Yeah. I mean, the baby formula is obviously out in many places. I kind of view this as a bit of a positive, to be honest with you. If you see the kind of crap that is in some of the, like, actually most of the commercially sold baby formula, even the reconstituted milk, I mean, you would expect this to be just powdered milk, which you take, right? You mix with water and you give it to the baby. No, you got to pump it full of silica and titanium dioxide and all of these additional vitamins and minerals. And I'm thinking, so hold on a second. Wasn't milk supposed to be like everything that the baby needs? Okay, maybe this one is coming from a cow, but it's got similar nutritional requirements as far as vitamins and minerals are concerned, right? So if it's truly reconstituted milk, why do you need to mess with it? So even that one, like Similac, I think is the one that used to be the least modified one. Even that one, if you look at the label lately, it's got, I think they've recently added silica to it. And I don't know why. There's no reason other than, because it was already reconstituted milk and it was dry and had really long shelf life. I think that it was 3 to 5 years. I mean, what good would adding silica do? Maybe even though it's a tiny amount, when you're selling billions of metric tons a year, if you add a little silica to every single one of these, adds up to a lot. So eventually you end up essentially selling a ton of silica at the price of the formula and you're making like a significant amount of profit.
Wasn't the news saying like, do not,
don't make it. Don't make it.
Yeah, don't make it.
So, because it's dangerous.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I don't think that would lead to like a renaissance of breastfeeding. I think it would lead to people like starving their babies or something. I think it'd be really bad.
At some point, it probably would lead to a renaissance of because, I mean, the police state is fairly well established and they will use child neglect to basically enforce a lot of things on people and people love to snitch up on each other apparently, so they will probably report each other for child neglect and things like that. So I think at some point there may be a reluctant recurrence of breastfeeding, not as much as I would like to see, but I think some people will realize that it's basically you just have to rely upon yourself, at least the ones who care about their babies. I know some people, you know, they just wear those babies around like a badge of honor. Hey, look, I'm a successful career person and I have two babies, right? Clap. Yeah, I'm serious. Some of them, I mean, they treat marriages like that. They also treat partners in marriages like that too. It's just you're so accomplished. Look at the checklist. Rich spouse, check, right? Two babies, check. Successful career.
I know people like that for sure. And okay, so what else? I remember you mentioning a while ago that the fence was up. They took it down and then they put it back up. Is that what you're saying?
They're starting to put it back up. Mm-hmm. Basically, now there is non-scalable fence. They said, oh, we're doing it only around the Supreme Court because people are likely to storm it and jump in and, I don't know, maybe mob the justice. They're there very rarely, mm-hmm. by the way. I'm not even sure. Why do they have to go to the Supreme Court again? If they're just reading this stuff and taking a vote, right? I mean, this can be done from anywhere. They're probably sitting in their homes ever since the pandemic, if they were ever going to the Supreme Court to start with. But they use this as an excuse because Supreme Court is right across the street from the Capitol Hill. And they started to do the fence thing around Capitol Hill as well. And I noticed that they started to put back the fence, not three layers, only one layer so far, around the White House as well. So something's up. I mean, it's not as sinister as it used to be. I mean, there were times in early 2021 where you couldn't even see the White House. It was basically like a layer of, they call it unscalable fence, which for the first time that I ever saw that type of fence was during Obama's first inauguration. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then there was a second layer of fence, which looked like basically barbed wire. And then was a third layer of fence that looked almost like, I don't know, like portable concrete. And then like, if you were like a block away, you actually couldn't see the White House. All you were seeing was fence. We're not to that level yet. I think so far, the only thing that I've seen around the White House is the, first layer, they call it the unscalable fence, which is this like heavy duty, I think aluminum or something. And I don't know what they call it unscalable. I mean, you can clearly scale it if you want to, but, that's what they started with back in 2021. And now I'm seeing it being installed. And it used to be, all three layers were removed up until maybe like a month ago.
If you drank a bottle of methylene blue, you could scale it pretty easily.
I would say like, if you were running away from financial collapse, you don't need the methylene blue. You'll scale it up. Just try to escape.
Well, interesting world, seeing what's happened. I mean, it really seems like we're entering the beginning of a new phase of something. Well, I mean, we've been talking about this for two years, and so but it seems like it's getting very real now. So
the strange part is most of the, I mean, the people that I see here on the street and like some of the big honchos that, you know, a lot of them are based in D.C. and I see them on the street, they at least ostensibly on the outside, they act like nothing's happening. You know, everything's fine. Everything's, you know, don't worry. We got it. That's the attitude that I'm, of course, they're trained to do that, right? That's their career. But, you know, it always leaves me thinking a little bit, well, do they really have like some tricks up their sleeve that we don't know about? And I'm afraid the only one they have is nuclear war, because I just don't see, despite their nonchalant attitude, like the developments that I see is basically, I don't know if you saw, the United Nations said there will be mass starvation events in the global south, right? Mm-hmm. Germany and warned its own citizens of impending starvation and food shortages this coming winter. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing happened in the UK as well. So, and that's official media. And, you know, if they're saying it, chances are things will probably be worse than what they're actually preparing people for.
I guess that like a bias towards normalcy is called the normalcy bias or something. Like people think that it could not happen or that like that's impossible.
It could not possibly like get become that bad, right?
Yeah.
But then the email you sent me, I mean, like I think one of the reasons is that, I mean, look, worst case scenario, if America still produces something, it is agricultural stuff, and a lot of it is exported to China. Which I'm thinking maybe that's why China is still playing somewhat nice with the U.S. If they stop like basically the chips and everything that they produce, I don't know if they can that quickly change their food supply chains to not rely on the U.S. because U.S. is exporting a lot of food to China. So if basically what I'm saying is that if that food basically if the population is truly at the risk of starving, it can be redirected to the domestic population and screw everybody else. But it's entirely up to the politicians. So we'll see. It does not look good for the current president and the party that is in power. And there is, you know, nervousness in the air and on the media. Now, only time will tell if this is just a big game, right? It's just playing us playing both sides against each other, which they always do. But I do sense a bit of a nervousness that things are getting out of control in the media, not the people that I see on the street. And this is somewhat confirmed by things that are happening in other parts of the world. So, it's slightly upping the scale of nervousness, not as high as it was in the summer of 2020. But I would say, again, where it feels in D.C. like we're about 40% back to where we were in the summer.
I'm like 100,000 times more nervous now than I was in 2020. I feel like it's like this seems the starvation stuff and the foods disappearing off the shelves and stuff like the almost everybody I talk to, I ask them what the grocery store situation is. And it seems like middle America is the most affected. And then people in cities and the East and West seem like they don't think that anything is happening, but almost everybody I talk to.
No, it's definitely happening. Yeah. It's just not affecting them yet.
Yeah. I've always been worried about this, but it's hit a new level.
I don't think the powers that be have made any secret that if the first people that they'll throw under the bus is flyover country, right? Mm-hmm. People shopping at Dollar General and places like that, they don't care about them. Those are the first one that will get starved. Mm-hmm. Ironically, these people also live in the part of the country that's producing all the food. So you try to starve them. What's preventing them from like taking all of these excess? Like each person there has like 5 guns per capita, right? In the middle of the country. I mean, if they start starving, they will take these weapons and go and take over all the food producing facilities, which happen to be there. Food producing facilities are not in the coastal cities. They're in the middle of the country. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it will be interesting, but back to our conversation about a year ago, I don't think the powers that be have anything other than war in their pocket. And all very small part of me always keeps thinking like, do they have some kind of a trick that we don't know about? But I would like to think that if they had one, they would have played it already, right? Why wait? And given everything that happened with Russia and the sanctions and how they actually ended up backfiring and making the Russian ruble stronger and the economy actually better and pushed Russia, China, and India together, which is something that you know, if you, there's this magazine Foreign Policy that my dad likes to read, and I every once in a while he sends me articles from it. They were expecting this to happen, but they said it's going to take 20-30 years. So now, just like the evacuation from Afghanistan, if you look at the like the report just before the whole fiasco developed and U.S. left in like in a matter of, I don't know, 48 hours, the latest estimate from the CIA was that that was going to happen, but it was going to take 3 to 4 years. And it happened just like that, in 48 hours. So just like similar, in a similar situation, this unification of Eurasia, you know, and Russia basically seems to have happened rather quickly over the last couple of months. And now the only thing that remains is, you know, can these countries get rid of their dollar denominated assets quickly, and what impact this is going to have on the dollar denominated world, which is mostly the United States and Europe. That's pretty much it. Which the mainstream media likes to call the civilized world, or like the consensus of the world.
It will be interesting to see what happens. Okay, let's jump
in. Get strapped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody know you need to get strapped.
I'm working on it. Okay. Let me scroll up here. Okay, so we're about 50. We don't have to go too long tonight because I have to answer my email. But what was like the most popular article? What wasn't it? Wasn't the PUFA as part of the spike protein?
That's, I mean, that was only from today. So I can't really tell because, well, actually, if you look at views per day, I would say that one is probably the most popular. Yeah,
let's just.
And on Twitter, it had the biggest number of retweets, except another one. I think the one about separating curing the terminal liver cancer.
Yeah, I think we talked about that.
Retweets so far.
Didn't we talk about that last?
Yeah, episode? I know, but yeah, I'm saying like, but I'm saying just as a comparison, this one like of all the articles I've ever posted ever since started the blog and the Twitter account. After the cyberheptadin, this one had the most retweets.
Oh, well, total? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, I'm sorry. Per day. Normalize it per day because it's only been up for like a couple of hours. Mm. So if you divide the retweets per day, this is second.
You know, Ray said this like in March, or not March, but like he said this in 2020. I like specifically remember him saying that linoleic acid was necessary for the development of the spike. Like, is that what this article is
about? The actual spike protein?
Yeah, I'm almost certain he said something like that. Explain what this article is about before I derail this conversation.
Well, you don't want to derail it. It's linoleic acid is part of the spike protein, and then the authors think that this presence of the linoleic acid, it's what's responsible for a lot of the immunosuppressive effects of the specific virus. Because it does tend to attack people with, I mean, of course, it attacks people with a suppressed immune system, but also, like, you know, several studies have already come out and said that getting COVID-19 actually leaves you with a suppressed immune system afterwards. And they didn't know why. I mean, it was kind of a mystery. They thought it was entirely due to the angiotensin system, but it turns out it's linoleic acid that's responsible. And it's basically you're getting like a, you know, even though I don't know if it's a fewer amount of particles. If every one of your cells, if you get really infected with COVID-19 and every one of your cells is starting to produce, is getting hijacked and the virus is starting to produce itself, right? Then this means it's generating a ton of linoleic acid, which is basically flooding your bloodstream as well, right? So you're getting the effect of extreme lipolysis, which can kill, can give people diabetes, can give people liver failure, kidney failure, and all these other things that basically niacinamide can help protect for, I guess, right? And then, you know, the authors of the studies are saying basically that's linoleic acid is really responsible for a lot of the inflammatory effects and the immunosuppressive effects that we're seeing, you know, from this virus. It's not just the angiotensin system. This virus, the spike protein of this virus, is itself inflammatory. Like it doesn't need an additional system. It can by itself, just by the presence of the linoleic acid being there, can be immunosuppressive, pro-inflammatory, and as we know, pro-estrogenic. And I think you've seen the several studies that came out showing that people with COVID-19 had a really drastic increase in estrogen. Well, many viral infections can cause that. So it's still the jury is still out whether the increase in estrogen from COVID-19 is bigger than what some of the other viruses cause. But I would suspect that if linoleic acid is there, the COVID-19 jump in estrogen would probably be much bigger.
Yeah, you and Ray must have been reading the same thing just like a few years apart, because I swear Ray mentioned this exact same thing. This is crazy. And this is funny. The we were truly puzzled by our discovery and its implications.
Yeah. And then further up in the popular press article, they're saying, yeah, linoleic acid is known to be inflammatory. However, it is vital for maintenance of the structure of the cell. Yeah. And it does a lot of good things to the body.
I swear.
They're always afraid. I mean, I guess I can picture every researcher is so terrified of losing their funding, right? I mean, like, it's their career depends on that. That is basically they're doing everything. I mean, it must be really hard to publish contrarian research. So you have to spend 3/4 of the paper explaining how, look, we're not rocking the boat, right? We really are rocking the boat, but we're going to say this in the very end, only one sentence, and everything else is, yeah, poof, you're great, right? You know, that we don't want to rock the boat.
Ray had some funny quote, and it was like, people assume that the articles are worth as much as the paper they're printed on or something. like most articles are trash most of the time. It was really, really funny. But
I would qualify that by saying a lot of them have good stuff in it if you know how to read between the lines.
Yeah. Reading hair loss papers and stuff, they'll state the genetic androgen hypothesis. Sometimes they'll have interesting stuff in the center, and then they'll restate it at the end. And so,
yeah,
it's bizarre why they do that. But like you said, I guess they want funding.
I mean, over the last couple of years, I've been trying to publish some studies, and I've had run-ins with the peer review committee. I can tell you that if these people are not on the payroll of Big Pharma, they must have been in the past, or I don't know how, but there's a great alignment of interests, and not all of them can be paid by Big Pharma. I don't think all of them can be agents, right? Something about the journal and then the interests of Big Pharma aligns. And I think it's just basically like the journal depends on specific theories being propped up and kept, even though they're completely fake, just as Big Pharma. Because if you're the journal of, I don't know, inflammation, and it suddenly turns out that most inflammation is caused by PUFA, but yet not a single paper in your journal has discussed that. Well, if this breaks out, this news becomes widely known, then your journal is probably not going to exist anymore, or it will lose all credibility. And of course, all subscribers, the advertising, which is mostly Big Pharma, right? So you try to maintain whatever the current dogma is. Not all of them, but the big journals are fully, they're not fully bought. They're fully, the way the system has been structured in such a way that naturally their interests align perfectly with Big Pharma. And for the biggest ones, Big Pharma directly advertises in there. Some of the small ones, it doesn't, but they know very well that if they rock the boat, it's over for them.
You would know that better than I would, but I think that's called cognitive capture or something, that once you get to a certain level, like, it's in your best interest to align with the kind of the dominant thinking and to lose yourself in it and to not rock the boat.
Jerry Rubin, what was the guy, the...
Oh, Henry, the Henry
civil, Rubin. Civil rights expert. He said, never trust anyone over 30.
Yeah.
It sounds like a very, I guess almost a stupid thing to do, but if you align with metabolism, I think people over the age of 30 and especially older, they start to become very risk averse, which is due to declining energy, right? So you switch from trying to rock the boat into trying to protect the boat mm-hmm. you've already built from being rocked by others. It's about wealth and career preservation. You feel like you can't afford to start from scratch anymore. And I think that's really what underpins most of the stuff that we see in the world that we think of as evil. It's just basically people who are getting progressively weaker and more decrepit, and they're clinging onto life desperately, everything that they've built so far, and they're terrified of losing it. So they will do anything, literally anything, to keep it. If we find a way to make this go away, I think the world will very quickly, almost overnight, become a better place. So if there was a way to overnight improve drastically the health of even very old people so that they don't feel as decrepit and desperate, I think that will resolve a lot of problems. I mean, arguably, the elite, the reason they're pushing us towards the abyss is because a lot of them are in their 90s and they're desperate for, like, getting this whole thing, you know, pushed through and implemented because they want to live forever.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Yeah.
Ray said a long time ago it was more of an emotional thing. And so what you just said fits into that almost perfectly. And the whole idea of transhumanism, they want to live forever, you know, like and faced with your own mortality, wanting to do something like that makes a lot of sense.
It's called the terror management theory. Mm-hmm. There is a Wikipedia page about it saying that in pretty much the entire culture, all human culture, no matter what society you go to, with very few exceptions, actually. Interestingly enough, they said that the people who are most at ease were the primitive cultures. Mm-hmm. And you know, they said, of course, the explanation is that these cultures came up with these like elaborate theories of why life doesn't end when a person dies, right? So the theory still thinks these people are basically, they're delusional. And if they really knew what was going on, they would be also terrified. But it says that 99% of the world is basically all the culture you see around you. It's based on terror management. In other words, trying to like distract yourself from your own mortality. And then when you're confronted with it, that theory says that most people become extremely violent. And you know, I guess we're seeing some of that too. So if these people, some of them who are extremely rich and extremely psychopathic, now that they're confronted with their own mortality, they'll do everything possible to either live forever or take everyone with them to the other side.
When I'm confronted with my own mortality, I go and turn the compost. That's the main thing that I do.
You do what?
I have a big compost now, and I've been turning that every 2 days.
What is it made from?
It's grass clippings, coffee grinds, food scraps. I've been experimenting with some other things I don't want to name. And
why not something simple, like buy all the cheap, like, I don't know, metric tons of gelatin, and then you dissolve that in water, and then you water the plants, and that's basically all the nitrogen the plants need.
That'd be expensive. That'd be really expensive.
I would say it's pretty cheap.
No, I mean, like, buying a bag of gelatin to throw into a compost would be like, the compost is basically free. It's a bunch of stuff you'd throw away normally.
But it's a lot of effort on your part to maintain it. Oh. I'm saying, like, this thing comes like in this powder, and when you need to water the plants to basically give it fertilizer, you just stir it up in a bucket, right? And then you water the plants, and then they don't need this for like another month or so, right?
Yeah. Well, and so I'm not saying that's a bad idea. I'm saying you could use urine as a source of nitrogen. That would
be, right. Yeah, we talked about this, right?
Yeah, but yeah.
you need to pee a lot. By the way, in order for urine to have sufficient amount of nitrogen, basically you'll need to be eating also a lot of protein, because mm-hmm. if you're only drinking the water, at some point, I'm sure you've seen this. At some point when you start peeing, I mean, the urine becomes, if you mostly drink water, becomes crystal clear. There's literally nothing there except water and salt.
Yeah.
And a few like dead cells. So the whole thing about urine as a fertilizer, that may work if you have like, I don't know, a couple of tomato plants or a couple of potato, I don't know, clusters. But if you have like, I don't know, anything more than an acre, I would say you need some other source of nitrogen.
Oh,
what about urea? Wouldn't it be cheap to buy like a lot of urea and then dissolve in water and just pour out?
If you saw how much I was making, you probably wouldn't. I'm making a gigantic compost. And so if I were to purchase products to put into it, it would just drain me financially. So like the people that make like these gigantic piles of compost, you need so much of it to, like, for example, I'm trying to repair the clay soil, and Ray suggested that you use like, or he just suggested making compost and then mixing it with the clay soil for the trees. And mm-hmm. so, but again, I'm not actually spending any money whatsoever. It's just a bunch of coffee eggshells and plants that I've mowed on the property and stuff. And so I'm happy that I'm not buying. I want to eat the bags.
Oh, so you're trying to actually change the soil. It's just a matter of fertilizing plants.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm trying. It's it will be some continuous thing. Like, I'll always have to make the compost, and so if I'd want to eat the protein, that would seem more appealing to me. But I see what you're saying. Okay. Okay. So let's talk about this one. I thought this was interesting. Just a week long break from social media alleviates anxiety and depression.
I think most people will say duh, right? But Ray has talked about this. We've discussed it several times. Another big bane of modern society is its over digitization. And you know, when you realize that the technology is just a multiplier, right? It doesn't really bring any value by itself, but it just multiplies the network effect, or you know, whatever you want to call it, just like the cheap production of just at a press of a button. That's why it's so vital to the current system, is because essentially drastically lowers the costs of almost anything that technology is involved in supporting, right? But then you can still charge the high price. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing basically like a few outposts generating the majority of the crap that's out there, and then basic technology, you know, magnifying it and multiplying it, and people sharing with each other and sending back and forth, and other people covering and putting on their blog, etc. I mean, we're doing some of that too, but it's just I think it's the fact that technology tends to routinize things and also expose you just to some of the most tried and easily digestible and truly thoughtless material that's coming out of like people's brain boxes. I think that's probably the most nefarious aspect of it. This study is trying to explain it by saying, well, it's because people, when they go on the internet, they're basically immediately go and start looking at other people's lives. Or you check somebody's Facebook page, Instagram, and other people tend to put only the best aspects of their lives there, right? So then if your life is not going so well, or if you're an average person, you're thinking, oh my God, I must be a total loser looking at all these good-looking, successful, rich people. And they're saying this is what's causing the anxiety and depression. I think it goes beyond that. I think it's the very nature of being glued to the screen and consuming this ersatz type of material that's really, if you trace the sources down to the, I mean, if you trace the actual pathway down to the original source, it's probably coming out of like, I don't know, just a few agencies in the DC area that are coming up with this stuff. And then the rest of the big tech world are just multiplying it, and a lot of people are playing a role in this unwittingly by forwarding these things to each other. Anyways, the study is pretty simple. It's like when people abstained from using any social media for just a week, they saw about 70% reduction in their symptoms of depression and anxiety. While the group that didn't, unsurprisingly, did not see a reduction. And in fact, there was a slight deterioration. Remember when Ray said, we're talking about like power outages, he said, I've been kind of secretly hoping this would happen because it will bring down the internet and then people will be forced to interact with each other and maybe finally wake up and say, we need to stop this madness.
I don't know if they did this in the article, but the one thing I would say is just like taking a break and not replacing it with some other activity that you enjoyed more seems, at least for me, to not work at all. And so, again, I've weaned myself, especially over the last 2 years. Like, for example, if somebody watching this podcast sends me a message or tags me in a tweet, I will not see it at all. I have everything turned off. I don't see anything anybody's saying about me. But I feel like, for example, just we're talking about the compost and stuff. When I feel like I have work to do now, like physical work, and I have been spending a significantly less time online. And so it's like I've unwittingly replaced that time I'd be on the internet or something with physical labor. And it's like I don't have to like be like, oh, I can't go on the internet right now or something like that, you know.
But that has its own benefits. I think like this study was a lot less involved in that. They just simply told people, do whatever you want, except, you know, like interact with social media. I don't think that they necessarily, I'm pretty sure they did not make them do physical work. If they did, I think the benefits would have been even bigger.
What if the person decides to watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians instead of going on
that,
social media?
To me, that's social media. It's produced by the same people that produce everything else you consume on social media. Okay. I mean, I think it was either the Kim Kardashian or the mother, who I think is the source of all of these ideas that the other rest of the Kardashian clan keeps monetizing. I think she's like a big shareholder in one of the big media companies. So she very much probably influences a lot of the like fluffy news that I call them fluffy news. If anything not related to war, economy, etc., right? If there's something celebrity related or is anything social, like about a big social event or a gala. I mean, there are companies there that are responsible for producing those kinds of news. And I think she owns a big stake in one of the biggest ones.
There's a dark episode talking about the Kardashians.
By social media, I would actually include TV, anything other than any kind of a, like, I don't know, scientific show. But even that now is actually, that's probably even the worst at this point, because you're going to get Neil deGrasse Tyson or Bill Nye, the science guy. And those, I would rather go, you should probably, watching Instagram and the keeping up with the Kardashians would be less damaging than listening to these two fools.
Yeah, you might be right. Okay, so let's talk about one more article. We'll talk about IdealApps. What about hypogonadism, oxidative phosphorylation?
I think that one, again, should be probably pretty intuitive for most people. But for if you go to talk to an endocrinologist, they'll tell you that most aging males suffer from what they call idiopathic hypogonadism or secondary hypogonadism. But they know it's treatable by administering either estrogen antagonists or aromatase inhibitors. So it sounds like, you know, like for a while they thought that the gonads are damaged. And basically this theory was overturned. People who got literally castrated because of prostate cancer, their gonads got analyzed. And they had all the enzymes and the same expression of all of these steroidogenic producing enzymes as young people. But for some reason, their gonads were not producing, they were not using cholesterol as a source material and producing sufficient amount of steroids. Turns out that about, 70% of that, of the reason for all the gonads not producing the steroids was that estrogen was sufficiently high and estrogen was exerting a negative feedback. But it didn't explain the whole story. And now in this study, they basically showed that it's the insufficient oxygen consumption rate in aging tissue, which is responsible for the underproduction of steroids in aging male gonads. And then some of the enzymes that are in the pathway to producing, let's say, testosterone are actually oxygen dependent enzymes. They actually attach oxygen, well, with a hydrogen as well. They attach a hydroxyl group to one of the steroids to push it further down the chain. And that step requires utilizing oxygen. And if oxygen is not present or incapable of being used, then those enzymes, even though they have the cofactors and everything is supposed to be working fine, they're basically they cannot continue that step because they're missing the oxygen. Now, why would an aging tissue be lacking oxygen? Well, tissue oxygenation, as per the Bohr effect, depends almost entirely on the production of carbon dioxide. And a carbon dioxide production, of course, it depends on the rate of oxygen phosphorylation, because I think 92% of it is produced in the Krebs cycle. So no oxidative phosphorylation or lower oxidative phosphorylation, you don't get to produce carbon dioxide. And even though your lungs may be still functioning fine, you may not be anemic, you'll be attaching the oxygen to the hemoglobin, it will not get discharged into the tissues that actually need it. So you'll be living in a pseudohypoxia, which is a term which the study actually uses. And that applies not only to your brain, but to every other tissue, including the gonads. So estrogen is part of the story, but I think the bigger story is the declining rate of metabolism, the lower oxidative phosphorylation, because even if you block all the estrogen in the world that you're producing, you're still not getting up to what young people produce, only about 60% there. And that step, like that last step, the missing oxygen, cannot be alleviated by anything other than raising back the metabolic rate, which would either require taking thyroid or some kind of an oxidizing agent, which will kind of works as a bypass to the whole step, right? And some people ask me on the forum, like, okay, so what do I need to do to restore it? Well, if you don't want to use thyroid, a precursor like pregnenolone and something that will substitute for oxygen, like methylene blue or vitamin K or even coenzyme Q10, that would probably be a good combination. Niacinamide will do too, because the ratio of NAD to the NADH largely correlates very closely with the levels of carbon dioxide and the levels of ATP. And the first step, the side chain cleavage enzyme, depends on ATP as a cofactor. So without sufficient ATP, you won't even make it past the cholesterol step.
Yeah, so that hypoxia that everybody tends to experience in aging that coincides with hypogonadism or low testosterone is not from a lack of oxygen, but it's a lack of carbon dioxide, decreasing the availability of oxygen, and that's called the Bohr effect. And for the stimulation of carbon dioxide, that depends on thyroid and the oxidation of glucose. So lowering free fatty acids and increasing NAD to relative to NADH, those things could all help.
Oh, yeah. And so I think that's an important point to make as well, is just taking thyroid. If you're on a low carb diet, but you're taking thyroid, that's not going to do you much good, because it's the amount of carbon dioxide that matters, that you produce, that matters. And the oxidation of a molecule of fatty acid, let's say, produces much less carbon dioxide than an oxidation of a molecule of glucose. So it's important to basically not only raise the metabolic rate, but make sure you're oxidizing predominantly glucose. And then, you know, when you're at rest, if you have sufficient muscles, will be oxidizing all the fat in the world you need. But when you're active, you should be burning predominantly glucose.
Yeah, I did this a while ago, but the stoichiometry of finding out how much CO2 and how much oxygen is required for palmitic acid and fructose and things, I don't even remember. I would need to sit down and try to figure out how I did this.
So I think basically a fat acid oxidation consumes more oxygen but produces less carbon dioxide.
Yeah, yeah.
While the glucose oxidation is the opposite. It consumes less oxygen and produces more carbon dioxide. So you'll be more, frugal with the oxygen that's already there if you're oxidizing mostly glucose compared to fats.
Yeah, exactly right. And so you're oxidizing fatty acids, you're basically making the cells slightly hypoxic by doing that.
Pseudohypoxia, called this in the article too.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Tell us about ID Labs. What is going on?
We're on the verge of releasing the steroid testing of nails and hair. This weekend they're doing the final testing, and I'm hoping finally that we'll have something next week. Even if the full testing isn't done, I will make sure that we at least release some of the major things like cortisol and DHEA, because cortisol and DHEA, that ratio seems to now pop up in, you know, a lot of studies, correlates, you know, you want it to be lower than 10, basically. Anything over 10 is basically seen in aging, in cardiovascular disease, in cancer, in viral infections, right? I mean, there was a study published, I think, back in the early 80s, which said that the primary role of DHEA at that point had not been elucidated. But if the author had to, based on the available evidence, if he had to make a guess, it was basically the antagonism of cortisol's immunosuppressive effects. So clearly for something like a viral infection, the cortisol to DHEA ratio matters tremendously, which makes you think, what is medicine thinking when it administers dexamethasone and I don't know what kind of other steroid, glucocorticoids, to people who are going into the hospital with viral infection? But of course, doctors know better than we do. And if things work out as planned, we should be able to test the thyroid hormones as well, which I think is huge. Now, a very good study came out recently, which we can probably bring up in the browser, and then people can look at it. It was done by Chinese people with about 250 Chinese women, and it confirmed they analyzed the number of different steroids, including thyroid hormone, thyroid hormones in hair, and they basically confirmed everything that Ray has been saying for years, which I hope that we'll be able to confirm, but they did it first. Well, they did it with hair, but we do it with nails. And I think nails will be more reliable because the nails absorb a lot more from the body, as we've already confirmed with the mineral testing. And they're much closer to normal soft tissue than hair. So anyways, that Chinese study basically showed that the amount of T3 declines with age, that the amount of estrogen increases with age. And keep in mind, this study was with women. So there's no such thing. I mean, menopause being a condition of estrogen deficiency, to me, that study conclusively throws this whole notion out of the window immediately. That basically fat mass is positively correlated with estrogen, negatively correlated with progesterone, and negatively correlated with T3. That muscle mass is positively correlated to progesterone, testosterone, and DHEA, negatively correlated with cortisol and estrogen. So a number of different things that basically Ray has been saying for decades, but there's been opposition both from mainstream medicine and some of the bodybuilder circles saying, no, man, you never want to push your estrogen down. So important for your muscles. Apparently not when you look into the actual tissues. It looks like all of these, I mean, cortisol, estrogen, these are basically catabolic hormones Reverse D3 is an anti-metabolic hormone. We all know that, right? But it looks like its levels are increasing with age, while the levels of T3 are declining, right? I think the interesting was that, if I remember correctly, T4 levels didn't change much, depending on age. But it doesn't matter, because it's the conversion, which is T3. And if that declines with age, which means your liver function is declining with age, another thing that Ray's been saying for a while, and mostly under the influence of endotoxin and estrogen. Really a great study. I mean, if you go to go to Google and type thyroid estrogen, hair, and Chinese, and it's from 2022. It was published in April.
I don't know why they changed profiling steroid and thyroid hormones with hair analysis in cohort of women aged 25 to 45.
That's the one, and I think it's from 2022.
Interesting.
Check it out. It's an eye opening. I mean, eye opening for people who believe in mainstream medicine, but to me, it confirmed so many different things about so many different claims of Ray's that many doctors said this is impossible. If that is true, I'll eat my diploma. So now I'm starting, I'm thinking of maybe if our experiments confirm this study as well in Nail, in both sexes, maybe I should call these doctors up and invite them to eat their diploma on one of the podcasts.
Yeah, I'm sure that would go over really well.
To be honest, at this point, I don't care. The world may end. So might as well speak the truth before we all go out.
Yeah, well, that's how I feel. Okay, anything else? Like updates to the DHTs, like all the studies that we had talked about previously? Anything about that?
Oh, did I say we're about to release sinasrin, another serotonin antagonist, as a product?
I didn't know about it.
By the way, all of the studies that in vivo studies that I was doing, the lab that was doing them was in Taiwan, but unbeknownst to me, that was just the front that was dealing with the United States, because Taiwan is a friendly country to the United States. The actual facilities were in China, and specifically in Shanghai. So over the last 3 months or so, basically everything has been put on hold. Now we will publish the studies that have already been completed. We'll publish a study with vitamin combination of B1 and B3, which essentially stopped one of the most lethal cancers that lab had as a model. And then we have the prostate cancer study, which was in progress and had some really good results. Basically, the DHT was making the prostate tumor shrink. Hopefully, it was about to cure them. That got canned because the lab closed down. So now we have to redo it. But at least the results were, fairly consistent with what we would expect. We'll see. I mean, if the way the world is going, if there's going to be a separation between the West and the East, I may have to find a new lab, because that lab, just the way they're corresponding with me, like they don't answer my emails. The excuse is, well, everything is under lockdown, which is true. I have a feeling that, they've kind of been told by the government there that, if you're doing, little by little, get rid of the American clients that you have and focus of work, on working with the friendlies, whoever those may be. It's okay. I'll find another lab. Don't worry. I mean, it's not that difficult. It just, it'll be a little bit more digging around, but I'm more excited for the steroid testing, because if things work out as expected, we'll be able to profile every steroid that you've heard of, a lot more than what LabCorp and Quest can offer, and hopefully we'll correlate. There'll be some correlation between these showing up, and some of the work has already been done by the Chinese scientists. That study that you just opened up, and then maybe we'll do. Some correlations will appear between the minerals and the steroids, and then we'll see if we can call G-Ball and
Hoop?
I don't know. Our old friend that is in love with the anesthesiology books.
I don't know who that is, unfortunately. What the tell us about sinasrin. What would that product do that the other anti serotonin drugs that you have up here do?
Well, I mean, so the lisuride and the metergaline are ergot derivatives, and they all are basically much better. Well, actually, lisuride is much better as a dopamine agonist than it is as a serotonin antagonist. And on some of the serotonin receptors, lisuride has a partial agonist effect. So it's officially considered a partial mixed agonist-antagonist on some of the serotonin receptors. It is a strong agonist on all of the dopamine receptors. Midazolam is also agonist on some dopamine receptors. It's considered to be a full antagonist on all of the non-serotonin receptors. But all ergo derivatives have some pretty unpleasant side effects, such as strong nausea and sleepiness and fatigue. Now, cyproheptadine, which is probably the most well-known non-selective serotonin antagonist, seems to be well-liked by most people, but just like the ergot derivatives, because of its histamine antagonism, it causes very heavy drowsiness for at least a week until you get used to it. Now, synanserine being pure serotonin antagonist, mostly on the 5-HT1 and 2 receptor families, it does not have any of these side effects. So it's a pure serotonin antagonist, and it seems to have a very good antiviral effect. And even though I think the Chinese are using it actually, because the original studies of synanserine against SARS-CoV-2, they came out of China. But it turns out that this is not a SARS-CoV-2 specific effect. That protein that synanserine inhibits, it turns out is required for several different large viral families to be able to infect a cell, including the coronaviruses, the influenza viruses, some of the rhinoviruses and the rotaviruses. I haven't seen any studies with the Marburg virus family. It would be great if you can do that. But some of the study I posted on the forum back in, I think it was 2016 or 17, it showed that cyproheptadine can actually stop Ebola, and they didn't propose a mechanism. I suspect it's probably something like that. And then another study later, it did a test with several different viruses and opined that the presence and the activation of the 5-HT2 receptor family is required for any viral infection to take hold. And both cyproheptadine and synanserine are very good antagonists, very strong, with very high affinity for that receptor subfamily.
Amazing. Okay, let's do two articles and then we'll call it a day here. Let's get back to here. Wasn't this one popular? Did we talk about this one last time? The allopregnanolone found safe may slow brain atrophy.
That's a new one. That was just this week I posted. It's another study with humans. And interestingly enough, so first of all, I think the first study outside of the one that resulted in the approval of Zulresso, I think it's the trade name. It's just they call it brexanolone because they don't want the public to realize that it's just pregnanolone, allopregnanolone. But outside of that study, there wasn't any other human study dealing with safety. And they did that study with Alzheimer's patients, and they found out that the maximum tolerable dose with no adverse effects was, I think, 40 milligrams. But interestingly, the administration was only once weekly. And even the low doses of allopregnanolone, 4 milligrams once weekly, it was done by injection. But still, such a low dose, you can probably mimic pretty well with oral or like topical as well, and with progesterone and preglone because they're reliable precursors. That had very good effects on reversing some of the atrophy that was seen in the brains of those Alzheimer's patients, and it resulted in improvement in their cognitive abilities too, which to this day, I don't think any other drug other than memantine, which is an adamantane derivative, was able to do. All of the other ones were really geared towards and approved towards mitigating the symptoms and slowing the decline. But I think this one with allopregnanolone was probably the first study outside of memantine that has evidence showing that it may actually be able to reverse some of those structural problems seen with Alzheimer's disease.
And that, what was the drug called? The B, is that available right now yet? From the pharma?
Brexanolone?
Yeah.
It's only available through infusion and only for postpartum depression.
Is it crazy expensive? Just out of curiosity. Not that anybody should use it. Yeah.
Of course. anything officially approved, I think that's what it's really all about. It's a license to sell at any price that the market would tolerate. And FDA doesn't make any secret of it. Out of it. When they, I remember that company that did the studies on kidney failure with pyridoxamine, which is one of the isomers of vitamin B6, They went and petitioned the FDA to basically pull this out of the market. And many legal scholars up until then had opined that FDA did not really have the power to ban a naturally occurring vitamin. Turns out they have the power to do whatever they want. And the explanation was, we're not banning it because it's a drug. We're banning it. We're pulling it out of market so that we can allow this company to basically recoup some of the costs that they had for the trial. That's all it is. We understand we're evil. We know we're going to be preventing a lot of decent people from reversing their kidney failures with this naturally occurring cheap isomer of vitamin B6. But that's really what the approval process is all about, is allowing this company to have exclusive sales rights so they can make as much money as possible.
By the way, semi-related, did you see some talk of like the FDA coming down on supplement companies?
Well, yeah, it was on the forum. Yeah, and I even filled out the form. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. I think this is something that will probably happen, depending on how things turn out with the war in Ukraine and everything else. I doubt that this will be high in priority unless things get really quiet, and then basically, the FDA and the lobby, the pharmaceutical lobby, gets to do what it wants, because right now it's focused more on selling vaccines, selling, you know, things related to the virus and the pandemic, maybe instituting a new pandemic. Reigning in the dietary supplement industry is high priority, but not as high as making trillions of dollars out of forced injections and forced antiviral treatments.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's funny because Ray mentioned that in the beginning of the last episode, like before that was like a month ago. And he said they might come down on progesterone. And I was like, is there any reason they do that? And he was like, there could be. And then this came out like less than a month later. Pretty wild.
It's a proposed law, which is still in committee. And then let's see what happens to it. I mean, it's definitely worrying in regards to the requirements that this law will introduce. It's basically, it will make the sale of dietary supplements, the vendors undergo pretty much the same requirements as pharma companies. In fact, some of them will be even more stringent. And of course, they will bankrupt most of them because nobody can afford to run a clinical trial with people for years for every single product they have on market. Now, what we sell are technically cosmetics. So if you sell liquid products, then it'll be a little harder, you know, to ban you outright. But of course, they can always find a way. And besides, they're just doing lip service to the law. I mean, I bring up the pyridoxamine example for a good reason. It's basically, many lawyers up until then had said that FDA does not have the legal power under the Constitution to actually ban a vitamin. Not only did they ban it, but I think they actually prosecuted a few people successfully. They settled, they never got to court, but basically they raided a few people for trying to sell pyridoxamine after it was pulled out of the market.
Let's talk about this one and then call it a day. So high PUFA intake correlated with mental disease.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's an observational study, which I don't necessarily, I don't like them as much compared to the interventional ones. But I think it's still pretty telling. And then the explanation that they give is, and it's still, again, linoleic acid. They only talked about that one. I said PUFA because linoleic acid is a PUFA, right? But they did single out linoleic acid, and they do say that it's basically, the reason is the linoleic acid is not only a precursor to inflammatory mediators itself, but it activates the master control of inflammation known as nuclear factor kappa B, NFKB. And I think it's that quote right there, to basically the second paragraph that I have. Yeah, the first sentence of the second paragraph that I've quoted talks about the NFKB activation. So depression, I mean, it's been known for a while that anti-inflammatory drugs relieve depression. Pharmaceutical industry has desperately been trying to convince people that these drugs don't cure it. They only like alleviate it. It's not going to put you in remission. Of course, it never cures it, right? But then again, some of the newer antidepressants that were recently approved, despite the pharma industry claiming that they're acting, that they're successful because of their activity on the serotonin system, turns out that some of the newer ones are not only are partial serotonin antagonists at the receptor level, but also act as either COX/LOX inhibitors or prostaglandin/leukotriene antagonists. So inflammation is definitely a big part of the depression puzzle, if you can even call it a puzzle. And ultimately, it comes down to decline of ATP levels in the brain. Multiple studies with animals have demonstrated that even a 20% drop of ATP levels in the brain turns the animal into a raging beast that attacks everything in its path. And then conversely, animals would learn helplessness if you infuse ATP directly into the brain, into the cerebrospinal fluid, rapidly, basically within minutes, release all of their symptoms of depression. So not much of a mystery here, especially considering the role linoleic acid plays. The new stuff here is that linoleic acid is not only an inflammatory, just like the one on COVID, not only an inflammatory precursor, but it actually activates a number of different inflammatory systems here, specifically the NFKB cascade.
I know a couple vegans on Twitter with mental disease that eat a lot of poop.
Do you know a vegan without a mental disease?
Oh yeah, true. Good point. I was gonna say, doesn't NF kappa B coincide with intracellular calcium accumulation, and then I read something about this turning on nitric oxide and that being a consequence of
nitric oxide, estrogen, mm-hmm. and serotonin. Mm-hmm, anytime you see NFKB, any of these three, it will probably co-occur in the study that you're reading. Mm-hmm. Just try it out. Try NFKB and then followed by stradiol, NFKB followed by nitric oxide, or NFKB followed by serotonin.
I'm sure I have something in my notes, but it's too small really to see, to be honest with you. Okay. Unless you want to talk about another one, I thought we should keep the show relatively.
I mean, since we're talking about, we did too about PUFA, one of the studies there shows that stearic acid is actually a direct estrogen receptor antagonist. Mm-hmm. And I know Pete has spoken many times that, you know, and we have discussed before that the polyunsaturated fats are estrogenic because of their structure. But all of the evidence so far, up until like the last year or so, has been that they promote the effects of estrogen because they increase the hydrophilicity of the cell and allow estrogen to get in while preventing it or like limiting it, like the ability of the cell to actually excrete it. So the effects of PUFA so far, the evidence was all indirect, right? While this, and conversely, the saturated fatty acids, if basically, like Ray has said, that basically they reduce the estrogenic signaling inside the body. But up until that study, I was not aware of other studies that actually said that the stearic acid can actually bind the estrogen receptor directly, in other words, and prevent estradiol from binding it. So it acts similarly to drugs, to progesterone, which does the same. And just like progesterone, it actually decreases the expression of the estrogen receptor alpha. Estrogen does the same, and caffeine does the same. If you remember that old study we discussed on one podcast, that it can actually make the estrogen receptor alpha disintegrate and reduces the amount of the estrogen receptor inside of the cell. Apparently, stearic acid does the same. So it's a very direct estrogen receptor antagonist, similar to progesterone, and slightly weaker though. It's 50% effectiveness. EC50 was about 50 micromoles, which is achievable with a dose of less than a gram. So much higher dose than what you would need from caffeine or progesterone, but then again, much more versatile and widespread and ubiquitous. And, you know, a lot more people have access to stearic acid compared to how many people have access to progesterone. So if they ban progesterone, we need all of the remaining natural estrogen receptor antagonists we can get our hands on, and stearic acid seems to be one of them. There's another study which I haven't posted here, but it looked at methyl stearic acid, which is in one of our products, Defibrone, and that one was also an even stronger estrogen antagonist than plain stearic acid, and also worked on the estrogen receptor beta, which actually acts as an antagonist of estrogen receptor alpha. Pregnenolone has similar effects to methyl stearic acid. They both act on the estrogen receptor beta, ultimately having the effect of decreasing the expression of estrogen receptor alpha. So widespread, widely available, relatively cheap ingredients, which, God forbid, if FDA starts banning the over-the-counter steroids, we may have to, you know, start using more often.
Unless you have a huge amount in your closet. So that's
you mean like a progesterone or
of all of them. So I would stock up right now. Like the Berkey filters I posted a while, I keep checking the prices. They're going up and up and up and up. I know that's not mind-blowing to anybody, but I'm glad I purchased stuff in. I purchased a lot of stuff in 2021 that is very expensive right now. So I am very happy that I purchased.
What filters are those? Berkey filters?
Those Berkey filters, like the fluoride, and I purchased like a water distiller. Oh, okay. I just purchased a bunch of junk in 2021, and I'm very happy about. Okay, that's
probably now 40-50% more expensive.
Yeah. Okay. Let's call it a wrap there. Really appreciate it. What else do you have going on, Georgie? What else is new in your life?
Nothing is really new, man. I mean, it's like one thing about Western societies you've noticed is that somehow they've managed to implement stagnation into people's everyday lives. Unless you really, I don't know, unless you and I talk and have the podcast with Ray and I interact with people, you know, all over the world that live in very different cultures, I would be pretty stagnant myself. I mean, it's really kind of have to make an effort for new things to happen. I know Ray says that the world is always new and always happening and always becoming. I think the elite has found the secret formula to make it here, at least in the Western world, for things to become, to look and feel very stagnant.
Just waiting for you to come over to Mexico, George.
I mean, if they continue the way they are right now and if they continue to like board up the White House the way I've seen it, them start doing, and prices continue to rise, you saw what happened with the stock market this week. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. It will be a very interesting summer. But if nukes start flying, then I'm splitting. Yeah. I'm out of here
today. See, you could have helped me today because I had a gigantic knife and I cut down a cactus and added it to the compost, and you. That would have been enthralling and really in life.
Why didn't you make tequila out of the cactus instead of turning it into like compost? What a waste.
Isn't the tequila made from a mezcal? Like, oh, I'm so dumb. I don't know. It's from not like a cactus, right?
From agave.
Yeah. It's like a spiky cactus. They're like good sources of nitrogen, I think, and they make the compost smell.
And a great source of electrolytes. I don't know if all of them are edible. Or drinkable, but I think if you can get get the juice out of it, a lot of them, I mean, all of these desert plants are very good at retaining electrolytes. I would ask Ray. I think, I mean, a lot of the cacti species are edible, or at least their juice is drinkable. So I'll be curious to see what he has to say about it. I mean the aloe vera juice is drinkable, right? Mm-hmm. And I think aloe vera is a type of cactus, just not as spiky as the rest of them.
You're probably right. I've been asking him mostly questions about growing stuff. Okay.
Does he grow stuff? Does he have a garden?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I have never asked him, but he seems to know every question I ask him. Like, cause I was like, did we talk about this already? I asked him Ray, my nightmare is spending tons of time growing trees and stuff. And then them producing fruit that's tart or sour. Like it's not good. And he said the main thing for that was like adding compost with like animal manure, like a really high nitrogen animal manure for the compost, mm-hmm. and that would make them sweet. But I think I'm going to...
Actually, the tartness, I think it depends mostly on like on how much rain and how much sunshine they get.
Yeah, I have heard that too.
Like if it's a very humid culture, I mean, it's a very humid climate with not enough sunshine, you're going to get tarty and watery fruit. If it's the other extreme, which is really very dry, you'll get very dry but extremely sweet fruit. You want it to be somewhere in the middle. Now, without any compost, I mean, but then again, like, what kind of trees are you planting? Trees or what are you trying to raise?
Well, right now I have a guava, mandarin, and orange tree, and I'm just like keeping them alive. But my priorities have kind of switched. I obviously I'm going to do chickens for sure. And I thought I was going to put a lot of time into trees, but I think that's too much of a liability. I think I want to do goats sooner than later and then do the trees while we're doing all that, because that's the iffiest part about the whole thing is like, it takes such a huge amount of effort. And so I do want to do it, but I think I'd rather secure food in the form of goats and chickens first and then try to do the tree stuff. Okay. Danny, Roddy.
You got a lot on your hands.
So. I do have a lot on my hands. So DannyRoddy.substack.com. I didn't even update the last episode. This is embarrassing, but I will do that. This is going to be kind of the home for all this content moving forward. It kind of already is, but I obviously forgot to update it last time. But guys, we have an amazing listenership. Feel very fortunate. Thank you guys so much. Georgie, any parting words before we get out of here?
It's getting more interesting by the minute. Just stay sane as usual and don't do anything crazy over the last couple of months. I think we're going to have some clarity this summer, like the way where this world is going.
Clarity or insanity?
I think clarity. I think the world is actually starting to get, the Western world is starting to get tired of its own insanity, and parts of it are starting to implode because of that insanity. So the question is how much of the saner part of the Western world they're going to drag down with themselves, and or whether some of them will actually wake up and, you know, admit to their culpability or stupidity and you know, turn towards the light, away from the darkness.
You're the eternal optimist. I'm the eternal pessimist.
I think we're both realists masking as pessimists. Yeah. We're secretly optimists, right?
Yeah, that sounds right. Okay, Georgie Dingov, thank you so much. IDLabsDC.com. Follow Georgie on Twitter.com/hateit. Guys, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Substack or DannyRoddy.substack.com. Subscribe to that for free. Okay, guys, take care. Talk to you soon. Peace out. Bye-bye.